Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What does it take to grab and hold the attention of students and help them develop the motivation and self-discipline to thrive in school and succeed in life? With 3 weeks to go before the start of this school year, many parents and teachers are naturally thinking about the best ways to put the kids they care about on a path to achievement. And as my guest today is convinced, the best way to do that is to start with high expectations and boundless energy on the very first day, and then ramp up from there. Author and educator Ron Clark is the founder of the Ron Clark Academy in Atlanta, which serves 5th through 8th grade students and has also provided training to more than 10,000 visiting teachers from around the world. Clark and his program have been widely recognized and written about, and have even attracted the attention and admiration of Oprah Winfrey, who is such a fan that she not only featured Clark multiple times on her TV show, but attended the graduation of his first class of eighth graders in 2010. Ron Clark is with us today to talk about his new book, The End of Molasses Classes, Getting Our Kids Unstuck, Extraordinary Solutions for Parents and Teachers. Ron, welcome to Think.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here.
So you tell a little bit about your personal story at the beginning of the book, and I was astonished to hear that you had no intentions of becoming a teacher initially.
No, I never wanted to teach. I was the first person in my family to actually go to college. And I was at East Carolina University. I was working 40 hours a week at Dunkin' Donuts. And when I graduated, I had saved up $600. And I thought I was high on the hog. And I said, I got to go around the world. And my mom was furious. She said, you've got to get a job. And I said, no, I've got to go. And I moved to London, England. I didn't know anyone there. And I didn't have a job. I was eating cucumber sandwiches every day. And then I love Texas so much. And this is one of the reasons why. I turned the corner off Trafalgar Square, and I saw this huge restaurant, and it was called the Texas Embassy Cantina. And they were hiring waiters, but you had to have a Texas accent. And I was like, well, I'm from North Carolina, but I can pull that off. And I went in there, and I was talking to the lady, the manager, and she said, oh, we just love your accent. You must be from Texas. And I said, well, actually, I'm from North Carolina. And she said, oh, isn't that in Texas? And I said, well, actually, kind of, yeah, it's right around there. So, but I had to dress up like a cowboy, and every table I had to say, hello, my name is Ron, and I'm going to be your waiter. Welcome to the Texas Embassy Cantina. There is no greater. So prepare yourself for a mighty fine time. You've come to the place to wine and dine. We're going to serve you right the Texas way and give you food to make you say ole. We're going to go the extra mile to serve you right Texas style. Yeehaw! So that was my life. So I did that for 6 months, and then I got tired of it. So I got a backpack, and I just started going all over Europe from country to country, and I got food poisoning in Romania. It was really bad. I ate a rat. It's a long story. But I flew.
You literally ate a rat.
I ate a rat, yeah, on a stick. I did.
Okay, well, this being lunch hour for many people, we'll spare the details.
Skip the story. But I ended
on
up.
On a stick.
I flew home to. I'm a bit of an adventurer. Mm-hmm. So I flew home to North Carolina, and I was in the hospital to recuperate. And my mom told me at a local school that a fifth grade teacher passed away. And I had no interest in going into that classroom, but you know how moms can be. She said, if you don't at least go talk to that principal, I'm not going to support anything you do forever. So I went and talked to the principal, and she showed me the class, and they were just all over the place, crazy, and desks everywhere, and it was a mess. And the principal looked at me, and she said, none of these kids are on grade level, and you're just the man for the job. And I said, no, I'm not. She said, don't you want this job? And I said, no, ma'am. And she said, then why are you here? I said, my mama made me come. I don't want this job. But then this little kid looked up and said, is you going to be our new teacher? And I said, I guess so. I live my life through my heart. And if I feel something, I go for it because we only live once. And I don't want to have regrets. I don't want to look back on my life and say, I wish I had done things differently. So if I feel it, I do it. And I just felt it. And so I said, all right, I'll do it. And the next day I started teaching, and 18 years later, I'm still there and I'm still loving it.
So when we're going to fast forward here a lot, but tell us a little bit about the Ron Clark Academy. And I want to actually start with the way you reserve spots for students, not simply based on economic diversity, but you also look for diversity in their home life and how they're doing on grade level. So there's some students who are doing really well, and there are other students who are really struggling. Why do you mix them up that way, and why is that important?
The reason I mix them up is because we're actually an educator training facility. We invite teachers from all over the country and around the world, and many come from Texas every year, to come to Atlanta. They sit in our classrooms, they watch us, they interact with me as I'm teaching, and we're showing them different strategies they can use to help kids be successful. In order for the program to work, I had to have all different types of kids. If I only had gifted kids, that wouldn't apply for some teachers. If I only had kids who were struggling, that wouldn't reach every teacher either. So I wanted to show how our program affects every child. So about a third of our kids have never really had academic success prior to coming to us. A third have some discipline issues, some more severe than others. And then a third are average, and we usually have a few gifted. So we can show how our methods affect everyone.
Mm-hmm. And when they get into the school, you make a really big deal about their arrival at orientation. Can you talk about that?
Oh, yes. School should be fun. I want kids to love it. I want it to be a place where there's no fear and there's no animosity. I want kids to realize that they should have a love of learning. At our school, we don't push. We got to prepare for these test scores, prepare for these test scores. It's not all about test scores. It's about loving to learn, and our test scores are the highest you're going to find, and it's because they have that love of learning. But on the first day of school, we set that tone. We have a DJ playing out in the parking lot. All the teachers are lined up as the kids get out of their cars, and they're coming up to the school. The teachers are picking them up, twirling them around, running with them in the school. We have a dance party. It's a big celebration because we want the kids to say, wow, this is going to be the best year of my life.
What's cool about that is that so it's one thing to have that, you know, fabulous party on the first day of school. Then there's the next day where you sit down to seventh grade social studies. And your goal is to maintain the same level of enthusiasm, not only among the teachers, but among the students.
Yes, I tell my staff members, we have to set the tone. We can't sit down at our school. We have to stand up the whole time. Kids are never working on homework or working on worksheets. It is all high energy. It is all exciting. We're competing against video games and iPods and all these wonderful movies. And kids these days, they need energy. They need to move. They need to move their hands. And they need to be excited. And so what we do is we try to fire them up and bring that magic to the classroom every day in every classroom. We have what we call a sense of urgency. I told my staff, from the moment the kids walk in, I want it to be exciting and I want you to be ready. I don't want the kids coming in slowly and you're kind of getting your stuff together. I want you to be ready. And then I'm going to teach the whole time. And the second they leave my class, I want Miss Barnes down the hall saying, come on, kids, let's go. Let's get it. I want to show these kids that we love it. And if we love it, they'll love it, too.
And something, it's one of the things you mentioned in the book, it's important that you greet every kid with a smile every day so that they know you're happy to see them.
Yes. I'm going to tell you, I'll rap my lessons. I'll jump up on the desk. I'll stand on my head. I dress up as characters. But not everyone's going to do that. What everyone can do is smile at these kids. You can laugh with them. You can call them by name and tell them that you're glad to see them, show them that you appreciate them. When you teach your lesson, you can look them in the eyes. Because I've been to every state to watch educators to see what's going on in our country. And what I find is that educators spend about 80% of the lesson either looking at the board, looking at the whiteboard, or looking at the overhead projector. They rarely look kids in the eyes. They're teaching the lesson. They're not teaching the kids. So there are a lot of simple things in the book that everyone can do to make learning fun for children.
You also stress the importance of getting to know them outside an academic setting. What's so special about that?
Because it shows kids that you care. Mm-hmm. I encourage teachers to go to baseball games, to visit the homes, to tutor the child in the home at the kitchen table with the parent there. Because not only are you teaching that one night for that 1 hour, but you're showing that parent skills that she can use every night from then on. It's all about building a bond. And I usually pick the tough nuts, the kids that are really I'm struggling with, the kids that aren't really doing well. And those are the kids you got to bond with. Those are the kids that nobody else has gone to see him play basketball, and there I am. I'm going to show up, and I'm going to sit in the stands, and I'm going to cheer for him. And he's going to say, Mr. Clark, what are you doing here? I'm like, I'm here to cheer for you, buddy. I'm proud of you. And then when that kid comes to the class the next day, he'll be a different child. It doesn't make everything perfect, but when those kids start to cause problems, and I say, Marcus, what are you thinking? They'll say, sorry, sir, mm-hmm. because they know I care.
You have a great story in the book about a kid who said on, I guess, the first day of school, I want to be a professional basketball player someday. And this kid did not look like a likely candidate.
Right. Poor little Sita. He is a scrawny little thing. In fifth grade, he must have weighed 65 pounds. I mean, he was just so skinny and he wanted to be a professional basketball player. And so I hate when kids say that, first of all, because it's so unlikely. So I always try to redirect them and say, well, wonderful, that's an outstanding goal, but you know, you had to go to college first. What's your major going to be when you finish your basketball career? And I always tell kids, no matter what you do, whether you're an athlete or what, if you're educated, you'll enjoy it so much more. Mm-hmm. An educated life is brilliant. And so, but I kept encouraging him. And then when he got, I went outside and played basketball with him because he wanted me to go play with him. And he was just horrible. He could barely, you know, get it to the goal. And then when he was in high school, he told me he was going to try out for his high school basketball team. He was so excited that he didn't make the team. And then he kept trying every year. He never made it. But he played in little community leagues. And he said, "Mr. Clark, I don't think I'm going to be able to go to college, and I'm not going to be able to play basketball. That's my dream." And I said, "Well, buddy, don't give up. If it's what you really want, put your whole heart into it." And so he played in some little leagues. And I went up to New York City to see him one time because he asked me to. And, oh, gosh, the gym was empty. I had like five people watching the game, and I sat there to watch him. And he was so excited to see me. And he had grown. He was so tall. He was like 6'4", but still wasn't that good at it. And he fouled out in the first quarter. He was so excited. He was swatting everything. He was trying to block all the shots because he was excited. And when he fouled out and he walked over to me and he sat down, he just looked so pitiful. And so anyway, but I kept encouraging him. And now he's 22 years old. And I got a phone call from him this past spring, and it said, "Mr. Clark, I have something to tell you." I said, "What is it, buddy?" He said, "Remember how I've always wanted to play in college basketball, and you always told me to believe in my dream?" I said, "Well, yeah, buddy." He said, "I just got accepted. I'm going to be playing on full scholarship in the fall." I was like, "Oh, my gosh." I said, "Cedar, I'm so proud of you." He said, "Mr. Clark, will you come watch me play in college?" I said, "Of course I will, Cedar." And then I said, "Have they seen you play?" And he said, "Yes, sir." But his skills have improved a lot because he didn't give up. And so I think it's a beautiful story. And I'm looking forward. We're actually taking all the kids, my entire fifth grade. We're all going to one of his games because his school's in South Carolina. So we'll be there to see him at one of his games this year.
Knowing that even in the best schools and in the best of circumstances, resources and just time are limited, how do you determine which of your students really requires additional mentoring?
Well, I visit the home of every kid I teach. I did it in North Carolina, New York City, and Atlanta because I want to know what's going on in the home. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times when you see what's going on in the home, that kind of leads you to know who's going to need a little bit more attention, who's going to need a little bit more love. And then also as a teacher, you know, the kids who aren't performing academically, the kids who aren't paying attention, the kids who seem really sad. And I teach a lot of kids who, when they come to me, they seem sad. And those are the kids I tend to gravitate to, trying to make sure that I give them something more than just an education, because most of the kids in our classes, what they really need is more than just what's out of a textbook. They need to know someone cares about them. They need to know that someone sees they have worth, and that someone believes in their potential. And then once the kids realize it, that you see that in them, they'll see it in themselves.
So you believe in potential, but you do not believe, you're adamant that not everybody, as you say, gets a cookie. Rewards are for kids who deserve them.
I hate this movement in our country saying, oh, you shouldn't give first, second, and third prizes to kids, and every kid should get a trophy because they tried. And I just think that's crazy because it's unrealistic in our world today, because our world is about you work hard. If you're a success, you can get a job, you get great rewards. In school, it should be the same. But we have this big movement where we want the kids. So we're so concerned about the self-esteem of our children. We want everybody to feel good and everyone to feel like you all did a good job, to the point where we tell kids they did a good job when they didn't. And, oh, you tried your best, so you da-da-da-da. And what these kids learn is that, oh, as long as I put forth some effort, everybody says I did okay. These kids end up 25 years old, sitting on the couch, eating potato chips, waiting for a cookie to come, waiting, where's my cookie? And they don't have a work ethic. And so at our school, we have a lot of fun. It's almost like a Willy Wonka type atmosphere, but it is flat out hard and challenging. And when kids do well, we tell them. When they do average, we tell them they did average. When they do poorly, we say that was not your best effort. That was a poor effort, and I need you to try much harder next time. And here are some tips to tell you how next time you can improve your effort.
My guest is author and educator Ron Clark, founder of the Ron Clark Academy in Atlanta, and author of the new book, The End of Molasses Classes, Getting Our Kids Unstuck, Extraordinary Solutions for Parents and Teachers. Ron has a signing event tonight at the Barnes & Noble in Dallas. That's the one on Northwest Highway that takes place at 7 o'clock. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education. You can enrich your career with new certificate programs in web design, graphic design, and paralegal studies. Learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is author and educator Ron Clark. He's founder of the Ron Clark Academy and author of the new book, The End of Molasses Classes. He's got a signing event tonight at the Barnes & Noble on Northwest Highway in Dallas that starts at 7 o'clock. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can get to us via email to think@kera.org, or you can call in to 1-800-933-5372. So, Ron, I have several teachers in my circle of friends and in my family. A lot of them say they love the kids. Dealing with the parents is really difficult. What are the best ways to communicate effectively with parents?
Yeah, parents can be a handful, and I have my share. And I hate what I call helicopter parents, parents that meow, boom. Yeah. They want to come in and run to the rescue, or hover mothers who won't let their child have some independence. But I love working with the parents, even parents like that, because if you don't have a bond with the parents, you're going to have a really difficult road. Mm-hmm. And so my best strategy I use is, I visit the home. I sit down with the parent and I let the parent know how much I care about the child. I make lots of really positive phone calls at the beginning of the year saying, oh, he did such a wonderful job today. I want to let you know that. And they'll say, no one has ever called my house in 7 years to say my child did something right. And that is a wonderful, refreshing thing. And so I work really hard. To build the bonds. I have these postcards where if a child does something well, I've already got them pre-stamped and pre-addressed. So I just have to say, Anton did a great job today. So proud. And I'll just pop it in the mail and take me 10 seconds, it'll stay on the refrigerator for 6 months. The mom will see me in the parking lot. Mr. Clark, thank you so much for that card. I loved it. She'll show everyone who comes to the house. So I work really hard to build bonds. But I think the most important way that I really connect with the parents is I have math nights and sometimes vocabulary nights, where on Wednesday nights from 6 to 7:30, I invite all the parents to come to my classroom, and I teach them the same thing I taught the kids that week. And I make it fun. It's energetic. You don't put pressure or embarrass a parent who may not know an answer, because she'll never come back. You have to make it a fun, enjoyable experience, and the parents love it. And a lot of teachers will say to me, I ain't getting paid to teach the parents. And I say, but you know what? That hour and a half is one of the best hours of my week, because I'm building an army of tutors who know how to go home and work with their kids and who bond with me. And it's worth it. It's worth that hour and a half.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phones now to David in Plano. Hi, David.
Hi, how are you guys?
Great.
Hey, David.
Thanks.
Hi, I'm a young educator who recently graduated, and I'm wondering how you can take some of these really great ideas that you've shared and bring them into an interview setting, or how to implement them as a new teacher when you are under the microscope to kind of follow the rules of the traditional classroom.
Yeah, all right, David, here's my best advice for you. First of all, congratulations. When I interviewed in North Carolina, New York City, and Atlanta for teachers, and a lot of my friends who are administrators, when they interview, there's one main thing we're looking for, and that is, number one, are you going to be a firm disciplinarian? Because if you can't maintain order and discipline in that classroom, nothing else really matters. I don't care if you want to go in there and decorate your classroom like it's a circus. I would love that. But if it is going to be a circus, once you decorate it and you can't control the kids, it's all going to go down the drain. So I would say focus on, in your interview, stressing the importance of needing to have a disciplined environment and wanting a disciplined environment in there, so that then that you can do the fun, exciting things. Don't just go in there talking about how fun you're going to make it without stressing and the discipline, or it might not be perceived in the best way.
So what strategies do you use to enforce discipline but actually cultivate self-discipline rather than simply punishing kids?
The first book I wrote was called The Essential 55. Oprah Winfrey actually told me, you got to write this book, because she found out what I was doing in New York City. And the book is all about teaching kids to be good individuals, to want to be good intrinsically and not because you're going to be given something. And so it's all about taking the time at the beginning of the year and telling kids, here's what I need from you. And parents can do this too. I need you to do this and do this this way, and let's role play this situation, and here's how you shake a hand, here's how you walk in my classroom, here's how you turn in the homework. I spend a lot of time at the beginning showing them, I'm very specific, here's what I expect from you. And once you let kids know what you expect, the results are always that much greater. And so it's not that they're going to be given a reward, it's just that you let them know the expectations, and then naturally kids will try to meet those expectations.
And do you have to be prepared to repeat those lessons multiple times?
Good grief. Oh, yes, a lot. And there's no perfect world. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my classroom, as great as I am with being specific, I still have crises and issues. And so you just have to continue to reinforce and reinforce. And by being specific, the results are much greater. Not perfect, but much greater.
Tell us a little bit about the building that you teach in.
Oh, my goodness. Well, like I said, Oprah Winfrey told me to write the book. And then when I wrote it, she had me back on her show. And she, during the interview, she just stopped. She held the book up to the camera and she said, America, I want you to go out right now and buy this book. And 1 hour after the show, it was number two in the nation. It was crazy. And so it was right behind Harry Potter.
And before that, it had been like 144,000.
It's like 140,000 on Amazon. And then 1 hour after the show, it was number two in the nation. It was crazy. And so all the money from the book and all the money from the end of molasses classes goes into a foundation as well. And so anybody can come out tonight to support us at Barnes & Noble. I'll be appreciative of that. And so the money went to a foundation to buy a 100-year-old nasty factory in South Atlanta. The windows were busted out. It was surrounded by crack houses. And I just looked at it, and I had a feeling in my heart. And I said, this is it. We're going to turn this old nasty factory into a school that's going to change education around the world. We're going to bring thousands of educators here to learn from us. And we did it. And the school is cool. It's full of color, energy, life. We have a huge two-story bungee jump in the library because we think the library should be loud. Mm-hmm. When kids think of books, I want them to think of energy, excitement, music, noise, not be quiet and hush. We have a huge two-story electric blue tube slide that cuts through the middle of our school. And everybody who comes, you got to go down the slide. And you get a sticker at the end that says you have been slide certified. And the slide is more than just a slide because it says, instead of doing things the way everyone's always done, instead of taking stairs, why not be different? Why not be bold and to go for it? And the best part about how beautiful the school is that the money from the book, it just bought the old factory. Everything else was donated in kind. It took us 3 years of asking companies, corporations, and businesses, would they contribute a toilet seat, a door to the school? And after 3 years, the community pulled together to build the most beautiful school in the world. And that, to me, is why the place is so absolutely beautiful.
So I know that there are teachers out there right now who say, well, that's great for Ron Clark, and it's good that he did this. But my school, we don't have enough money for this or that, or we lack this. And some of those things, they can't possibly be important. And I know that you have a surprising answer to that.
Yeah. In the book, The End of Molasses Classes, 90% of the book and 90% of what we teach teachers is all for free. It's just how you as parents and how you as teachers interact with the children. Mm-hmm. You don't have to pay for anything. The book is about here are 101 things you can do as a teacher where you close your door, you look at your kids, and you bond and you focus on having high expectations for them. And so that's why the book, so many people love it and why it's doing so well, because people realize these are things that anyone can do no matter what school. You don't need technology. You don't need a great library. You don't need all these resources. You just need to have a teacher who cares about kids or a parent who's willing to try to be a better parent.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go next to Milt in Plano. Hi, Milt.
Hi. I've been listening here, and I'm a teacher. And all I keep on hearing is fun, 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 fun. And I'm a teacher, and I take the opposite philosophy as I talk to the students and tell them, school's hard work. School is hard work. It gets to be fun when you're successful at it. But it's hard work. We don't put slides down and stuff like that. You keep on repeating it. School is hard work.
What do you think, Ron?
Well, I wonder if all the listeners, I'd wonder if they'd rather go to Milt School or go to my school. Which class would you rather be in? My school, if you came to visit Milt, I appreciate your comment. I think you would say, wow, there is a lot of fun here. But I guarantee you, my school in terms of academic excellence and our expectations is higher than any school you're going to visit. We start fifth grade with eighth grade algebra. We're sometimes 2 to 3 to 4 years ahead of what we're expecting of these kids. So it's rough. And these kids, sometimes these kids get upset and the parents get upset, and it's a struggle because we are pushing these kids so hard. Milt, my mom, used to give me medicine. And when she gave me medicine, she would sprinkle sugar in it a little bit so that I would take it. At our school, we have that medicine you're talking about, that hard, hard work, but you got to have the sugar. You got to have the fun, because if you have the fun, this kid's going to want to be there. And Milt, if they want to be in your classroom and they see that you can make it fun, then they're going to try so much harder for you.
Do you guarantee that every student who gets in fifth grade will be allowed to remain through eighth grade?
The first year of our school, 5 years ago, we implemented a policy where if you weren't cutting it, you were on probation, then you lost your scholarship, because the average income of our families, 90% of them, is $34,000 or less. So we said, you've got to earn this scholarship. And about a third of them, not quite a third of them, didn't. And they lost their scholarship.
And let me know, the cost of tuition is about $18,000 per student. Is that right, per year?
Yeah, that's what it would be. Because the reason, it really costs us closer to $10,000 a year to educate the kids. The $18,000 comes because we're training 10,000 teachers, uh-huh, educators in the school as well. But the parents pay about $45 a month. That's the contribution they make. But after that first year, it broke my heart. I couldn't stand it. And I said to myself, you know what? We're trying to help all these public schools, but public schools can't just let kids go like that. And so since then, we've kept the kids. We've had one who left over the past 3.5 years just for academic reasons. That was more because of something else, actually. But so now we keep them. So now we pretty much run like a public school, where once they're with us, they're with us, and we are forced to find a way to be successful with every child. The first year, though, we messed it up.
Do you consider the school to be a lab school?
We don't like to call it a lab, but it is like a lab. Because mm-hmm, if Milt were to come to our school, what they're doing is they're sitting in my classroom, they're watching me teach with the kids, and I have some classes of 44 per class, some classes of 30 per class, and they're watching and they're learning from us. They're in workshops. So they're actually there to see all the hundreds of different methods and techniques we're using. But we're kind of like a store, not where you buy something, but we're like a Walmart, where we have lots of different techniques and methods we're using, and you come in and pick and choose. I'm going to try that. Milt's going to say, I'm not going to wrap that lesson. But he might say, you know what, but I am going to do that great reading program, or the techniques he used to teach that math lesson were incredible. I'm going to try that in my classroom.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Thomas in Dallas. Hey, Thomas.
Hey, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just completed my second year teaching with the Dallas ISD.
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And the first year, I took a different approach on my delivery of the curriculum, and I was kind of hard teacher with them. But the second year, I just realized that the students that are in my class are just the students to me, but they're friends, they're people who have their own challenges. When I realized that, I tried a different methodology on delivering my curriculum. And last year was by far much easier, and it was a little bit successful. But the hardest thing I had was to face was those student teachers, they were not buying into this philosophy that you have to be friendly with your students, you have to approach them holistically. I really appreciate if you can comment on how to convince your colleagues on taking a different route instead of just old-fashioned, very strict, by-the-book kind of approach.
Thanks for your call. Yeah, how to get, if everybody else teaching around you isn't so interested in doing these innovative methods, what's a teacher to do?
In New York City, I had some teachers who were reluctant to teach in the way I was teaching and to bring the passion and the energy. And their kids really did not enjoy their classrooms. And so I said, oh, you know what would be wonderful? Why don't we co-teach some lessons? Why don't we do a lesson together? I said, because you're so smart in that subject. I really would love to co-teach with you guys. I could learn a lot from you. And so they were like, sure, let's do it. I'd love to show you my da-da-da-da-da. So I made the lessons fun as well as Milt extremely challenging. And then what happened was that, I rubbed a little bit of the magic of what I was trying to create in my classroom off on those teachers. And so that's one way. But also, I would suggest that you tell your colleagues who seem to be a little bit more by the book, tell them about specific things that you tried and the impact it had on you and the child. And the more they hear about success stories of those who have tried your method, then hopefully they'll be more willing to try it themselves.
You never hire a teacher without observing him or her in the classroom first.
Good grief. That's the truth. When I was in North Carolina and I was in charge of hiring teachers there, I would go on the interview and I would love somebody in the interview and I think, oh, wow, what a great person. I really like this individual. Hire them. Then they get in the classroom and it's a crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Just because they're a good interviewer, a friend of yours, doesn't mean they're going to be a great teacher. So in New York City, we made sure that every teacher had to teach and I wanted to see it. And in Atlanta, Georgia, if teachers from Dallas are going to go all the way to Atlanta to watch my educators and watch me teach, I've got to have the best of the best in every classroom. So they go through a long, lengthy process where they spend time in our school. They have to teach classes to the kids. It's hard to get a job at our school, but I guarantee you once I hire a teacher, it's the best of the best.
You're wearing a coat and tie today, and this is the way you would show up for work every single day.
Yes. Every staff member at our school, we all dress professionally. It is like sharp professional attire because I want people to see educators as professionals. And what bothers me is that we've got some schools who have dressed down days and some teachers I'll go observe and she's wearing her sweatpants or I've seen belly buttons. I've seen teachers bend over and I saw the G-string. I mean, I'm like, goodness grief, because if we want to be seen as professionals, we have to dress like it and act like it. I will say this, of everywhere I visit, Texas schools in Texas, there's something different here. The level of professionalism in schools in Texas is better than any state I've ever seen. I always tell people that because Texas is a special place, and so you are ahead of the game, but there's always room for improvement where we can show people that we are professionals. We need to be treated and paid like professionals as well.
Well, it's interesting that you observe that about Texas because, as I'm sure you're aware, we struggle mightily in this state to get students up to grade level, at least as determined by the standardized tests that we take. Where's the mismatch, do you think, between schools that are struggling and entire states that are struggling and those that seem to be doing all right? Is it mostly economic, or what's the issue there?
Some of it is the economics of the family. Some people, I've seen studies that really bother me where they look at comparing African-American children to Hispanic children to Asian children, and they're looking at the test scores. And I hear a lot of schools that will use that as an excuse. I say, well, we had an influx of African-American students and our test scores drop. It really drives me crazy because that's ridiculous and it's ignorant. What happens is that it's the economic situation of the family that is the best way to determine the success of the child. More often than not, if you have a child that's coming from an economically challenged family, it's going to be harder to get that child up on par. But what's going on around the country in terms of test scores, it's really hard to compare from place to place because everyone's taking different tests and everyone's teaching to the test, and you've got teachers who are cheating on tests, helping kids cheat on tests. So it's really hard, and it's hard to look at test scores and to let that tell you the full picture.
Author and educator Ron Clark is my guest. His new book is called The End of Molasses Classes. You can meet Ron tonight at the Barnes & Noble in Dallas on Northwest Highway. That signing event starts at 7. If you'd like to join our conversation, call in now to 1-800-933-5372 or send an email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education. You can enrich your career with new certificate programs in web design, graphic design, and paralegal studies. Learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is founder of the Ron Clark Academy in Atlanta, Ron Clark. He's also an author of the new book, The End of Molasses Classes, Getting Our Kids Unstuck, Extraordinary Solutions for Parents and Teachers. There's a signing event for the book tonight at 7 at the Barnes & Noble on Northwest Highway in Dallas. You can join us by sending email to think@kera.org, which is where we hear from Joe, who wants to know if you went through traditional teaching education, or did you come up with your ideas through trial and error?
I did get my certification to be a teacher, but it was trial and error. I would say 95% of what I've learned, it was just by I had to you come up with something based off necessity, trying to figure out ways to get kids motivated, excited, trying to find a way to teach fractions that would really work, trying to find a way to teach the Civil War so that the kids would love it, just out of necessity.
So do you think good teachers, I mean, education is important, but are good teachers born more than they're made?
You know, it helps if you've got a great personality. Mm-hmm. If you are kind of bubbly and excited, people tend to want to be around those types of people. And so if you've got that kind of personality, it helps you be a teacher because some people will kids will gravitate to you. But in order to be a great teacher, what you really need to do is to find a way to show your own creativity and love of the content. You don't have to be totally enthusiastic and jump around like I am. You just have to find a way to show kids that you're willing to smile at them, to laugh with them, and to design your lessons in a way that's so creative that they'll love it.
When you're teaching teachers, how long does it take to dispense with the, I tried that and it doesn't work, or this is not going to happen in my school? Or is it a certain kind of teacher who comes to the Ron Clark Academy to take your seminars?
We have all different types of teachers. They come to spend, sometimes they'll spend one day, sometimes 2 days or 3 days. That's the max. But they'll come, and sometimes the principal has sent the worst of the worst. And sometimes they've sent the best of the best. So we never know what we're going to get. And sometimes they'll walk in my classroom and they look like crab apples and they're just like, ah. But by the end of the day, they're crying, they're hugging. Teachers who have taught for 30 years are hugging me saying, I'm so embarrassed. I didn't realize I should have been teaching it that way, and I'm going to go back and I'm going to change. And so no matter who comes, they always leave with the most positive experience. I think it is the best professional development opportunity in the country for teachers.
Let's go back to the phones now, 1-800-933-5372. We have Daniel on the line in Fort Worth. Hi, Daniel.
Hi. I appreciated Ron's comment earlier about the way the teachers dressed. I've spent a lot of time in school buildings, and it always appalls me the way that so often teachers want to be dressed like, or want to be treated like professionals, but they dress like the students. And you walk into a high school classroom, and sometimes you can't immediately tell who's supposed to be in charge. But that wasn't why I originally called. I'm not an educator. I'm an architect. And most of my career, I have spent working on educational facilities, additions, renovations, new buildings. So I've spent a lot of time in public school buildings. And I noticed the way that the teachers decorate the classrooms. It seems like every square inch of the space has got something plastered on it. And I'm wondering what Ron thinks about if there's a correlation between that and why we have to give Ritalin to every other kid in the room. that overstimulation from the environment that they're in.
It's an interesting question. I don't think so. I think let me talk about Finland for a second. Finland, they have the highest test scores in the world. For every hour, they do 45 minutes of class instruction, then 15 minutes of physical education. They say they don't have something called ADHD there. They don't have attention deficit problems. They don't even know what that is. They say because their kids, for 45 minutes, they focus, and for 15 minutes, they're outside. They're letting off steam. Here in our country, we expect kids to sit for so many hours, and they're kids, and we want them just to sit and stare and listen. And so I think a lot of kids, they're classified with those disorders, and they're on medication, and they shouldn't be. I'm not saying all of them shouldn't be, but the majority of them really shouldn't be. But our school, Daniel, we wanted it to be colorful and full of energy and spark. We don't have one white wall in our entire school. There's passion everywhere, spray paint. I mean, we wanted it to bring it to life. And our kids say they love it. And they say that their other schools felt like a prison. It was white and plain walls. And they say that they love our school because it's colorful and it feels magical to them.
What kind of expectations do you have for your older students and keeping an eye on the new ones who were starting out in fifth grade?
We really do a good job of building a sense of family in our school and getting our older kids to be mentors, to bond with the younger kids, to care about them. And we really explain and we tell them step by step, here are things that you say to these kids. Here are things you don't say to the younger kids. Here are things that you could say that would help them become better individuals.
Back to the phones now. This time we will speak with Michelle in Richardson. Hey, Michelle.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call, Chris.
Sure.
And Ron. I am getting my certification to become a teacher.
Congratulations, Michelle.
Thank you. I felt like throughout my training, there was a lot of focus on trying to reach the lower achieving kids. All the assessment and the pressure from the state is all about trying to get the lower achieving kids up to par and not let them fall through the crack. And as a mother, I felt like if my child is a higher achieving child in those classrooms, I feel like he won't get enough attention. And I feel like I, as a teacher, if you have a higher achieving child in the classroom, so much attention is being focused on the other end. The
Amen.
Higher achieving ones won't meet their, you know, their potential. And
well, you've got, excuse me, Michelle, you've got all kinds in your classrooms.
Yeah. But Michelle, you're so right. You could have co-authored the End of Molasses classes with me, because I talk, a lot of the book is about this very subject, about how in our country, stimulus funds, Title I, No Child Left Behind, they're all geared toward the kids who aren't achieving. And when you look in a classroom in our country and you see kids of all levels, teachers are teaching to the middle or to the low. We're not pushing our highest kids. When I go around the world to Finland, China, Russia, India, they're teaching to the top, because those countries want to be where our country is in terms of the world economy. And so what I do in my school and what I talk about in the End of Molasses classes is how as educators and parents, we have to push the top. We have to teach to the top of our classes and find ways to get every kid in that class, the struggling learners, the average learners, up to that level. And what we found at the Ron Clark Academy is that when you teach to the brightest and hold everyone accountable to that level, the test scores for every child will improve.
Do you assume that all of your kids will go to college?
Okay, in my mind, yes. But I've learned that it's not right for every kid right out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
I've had some kids who right out of high school, they went in the military, they worked for a few years first because they weren't quite emotionally or they weren't mature enough to handle it. But eventually, yes, I want all these kids to be lifelong learners, but it doesn't mean that they graduate high school, go straight into a four-year college.
You travel with your students a lot.
Yes, we go all over the world. I started this 18 years ago, just selling Krispy Kreme donuts at the Piggly Wiggly grocery store and trying to raise funds. But we take the kids all over the world. Usually by the time they're in eighth grade, we've been to six of the seven continents. I want our kids to be global learners. And it's a lot of work and it's a lot of fundraising, but it's worth it because when you travel with a child, you've changed them forever.
Back to the phones now. This time, let's speak with Zach in Fort Worth. Hi, Zach.
Hi.
What's up, Zach?
Hey, what's going on? My name's Zach Tushon. I'm an actor, a painter, a writer here in Fort Worth, Texas.
My kind of guy.
I want to say that, you know, I really appreciate what you're doing because I really feel like things need to change. My question is basically, I want to know what you guys are doing for art, education, music, that kind of thing.
Our school is actually, it's not a performing arts school, but you would think it is. We, in every hour, you have to either use visual or performing arts in every classroom. So no matter what class you go into, you're going to see kids using their hands, creating something. They are performing something. They're using music in a class. So in every class, we use the arts to bring it to life because that's what makes us human. If you don't have art and if you don't have music and if you don't have culture, that's what makes us individuals and just the humanity of us all. So we make sure that we include that in everything we teach, and the kids love it.
So what about the shy kids? Do they have a hard time in this high-energy environment?
Yes. When they first come in, shy kids have a very hard time in our school. We really push our kids to speak up, to speak out, to perform, to work hard, and shy kids have a hard time, but usually for some of them, it could take months before they finally feel comfortable. But in the end, they begin to show us who they are. They begin to express themselves, and it's great. Because I don't want anybody to go through life and to not interact with people and share who they are. And we spend so much time educating these kids. I want them to be leaders. I want them to share their opinions, to share their ideas. I don't want them to go through life and hold everything within.
Do you worry? Last year was your first full class to graduate, is that right, from eighth
grade? Year before
grade?
Last.
Oh, year before last, okay. Do you worry about what happens that no high school can possibly compare to this experience that you've been able to create for them?
Well, what we did was, at our school, we've tried to prepare our students when they leave us that they can be successful no matter what the environment. And so we have all different types of teachers at our school, teachers who teach in different methods. So these kids are exposed to lots of different strategies. Because if you come to Atlanta, Milt doesn't want to watch me teach all day because he's going to say, I'm never going to do that. So we have educators who teach in all different types of methods, all nationally award-winning educators that you can go in, you can see and learn from. So we've prepared these kids to be successful no matter what the environment, and the kids have done extremely well in high school.
Let's go back to the phones now. This time we'll speak with Leanne in Plano. Hi, Leanne.
Hi. I wanted to just call and first say thank you for taking my call. And I am so inspired by your story, Ron, and what you're doing for education and the breakthroughs that you're making and realizing and the courage that you have. It gives me hope for America and for our students. And I told the guy who was asking what I was going to say, I would take myself back to school and take my daughter back and go to your school.
Oh.
It's just so I just really appreciate that. It gives me a lot of hope and inspiration.
Thank you, Leanne.
That's very, thank you.
That's very, very kind of you, Leanne. Thank you very much.
Do you think that American education is going to get better? I mean, I know you're a positive person, but there's a lot of challenges right now.
A lot of challenges. We focus too much on testing kids. I'm big on accountability and testing as well, but I'm not big on the focus where we are putting all this focus on teaching to the test and teaching kids how to prepare for the test. I have a rule at our school in Atlanta. I told my faculty, I said, you don't mention that test the entire year. We have the test too, but I said, I don't want anyone to mention it. I don't want you to ever say these words. Y'all need to learn this because it might be on the test. Because what we're teaching our kids in America is that the reason that you learn is because you have to take a test. And I want to teach the kids that you learn because knowledge is wonderful. And when you're an educated person, you're going to live a wonderful life. And so I want them to be lifelong learners. And so what we find is that by focusing all year on loving to learn, the test scores are through the roof and there's not that pressure and that stress there. And I think we're focusing on it too much in our country.
It's occurred to me before that really great teachers, they must have bad days like everybody else, but you can't let that show.
Oh, gosh. Look, I wake up some mornings, I don't want to get out of bed. Parents can be so difficult. As magical as our school is, we still have parents complain about this or that. I took kids on a trip, and we flew back, and the plane was 4 hours delayed. And it was an all-expense-paid trip. I had, kept the lights on at this person's house. We had did a fundraiser to get groceries for them. And we got off the plane, and that father fussed me out from the kids and all the other parents because we were 4 hours late as if I were driving the plane. So education is hard, and parents can be crazy sometimes, and it's difficult. And some mornings I don't want to get out of bed. But I'll drag myself out and I'll go in the shower and I'll smell the soap because that works. It'll wake you up. And then when I get in the classroom, I still don't really feel like being there sometimes. But when the kids walk in, I put it on and I'm excited. I'm like, all right, kids, let's go. And I act excited. I'm faking it. But after a few minutes, the kids will get excited and then I'll feed off that energy that I'm able to go on and teach. And then I really do feel great. But sometimes we just have to fake it.
How do your teachers support one another?
Well, during the summer when we do our pre-planning, I told the staff, I said, the number one thing I value in a staff is when I see you lift up each other, when you compliment something someone did, or when you pat someone on the back. I said, and if everything you can do this year, if you want to make me happy as an administrator and a teacher here as well, I want to see you lifting each other up. And so then whenever they do that, then I lift them up and I go over and above. So just making sure that my staff knows that's a priority to me.
And what are the best ways? We've talked about how parents can be problematic. What are the best ways for parents to say thank you? Is it a coffee mug and a Starbucks gift card during Teacher Appreciation Week?
Well, I'm not turning down any Starbucks gift cards. But sometimes gifts are nice. But really, just respect and never say anything negative about teachers in the home. Because even if you don't like the teacher, don't talk about it in front of the child. Because then the child's going to say, my mom doesn't respect this teacher. I don't need to either. Mm-hmm. And so just making sure that don't show up at the door to the classroom ready for a conference. You know, make sure you call. And don't email when you're upset. Because if you email when you're upset, it's going to come across like you're shouting. So sit down with the teacher and respect that teacher as an individual.
Ron Clark's new book is called The End of Molasses Classes. He's got an event, signing event tonight at Barnes & Noble in Dallas on Northwest Highway at 7. Ron, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. And everybody, thank you all for calling. It was great talking with you.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
The Think production team includes engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.